Well, we're at the end of week one of the federal election campaign. We are about to hit Easter. Of course, that changes the dynamics significantly. But who do you think won week one of the federal election campaign? Doesn't necessarily matter, but who do you think had the strongest campaign? I was joined a short time ago on ABC News on TV for the opinions of two people who are watching this incredibly closely, The Guardian's Amy Romikas, who has her own blog watching the federal campaign, and news.com.au's Malcolm Farr.
Look, I think Scott Morrison came out ahead only just, and the reason he did was that Bill Shorten and Labor generally exposed themselves to the Morrison attacks because of its concentration on cancer policy and health. Now, don't get me wrong, Labor's $2.3 billion spend on the treatment of cancer attracted voter attention and a lot of voter support. I know of one woman who broke down in tears when she heard it because she'd been through this dreadful ordeal with her husband, both his medical problems and their financial problems. So the policy itself is fine. But we've had Bill Shorten and Catherine King talking about cancer since Monday last week. And the hope was clearly that it would be the subject of the campaign to the exclusion of everything else. That might have worked under a more passive rival such as Malcolm Turnbull in 2016, but it was never going to work against Scott Morrison, who's much more aggressive, much more likely to play the game with steel-capped boots. And so he did over the last few days, testing Labor on its two important areas of carbon emission reduction and taxation.
Amy Romikas, how do you see it? I mean, in terms of winners and losers, it's only week one.
It's a tough one because I don't think that anyone covered themselves in glory this week. And I think that you're absolutely right. I don't actually think anyone is switched on. And why would you be? It's a 5-week campaign. The government has basically been in election mode since essentially the end of last year. So I think people just really have a, like, let's get it over and done with. That said, this experiment almost that Labor was trying to try and make Bill Shorten a little bit more popular, a little bit more positive by keeping him on the up and by keeping him just talking about the policies that Labor was doing, it didn't really work for them because the moment that the script started to deviate, he stumbled, and Scott Morrison is a good campaigner and he seized on that. The ultimate loser, though, is me for having to watch every single minute of this, though.
Look, all of us, really. But, you know, there have been some interesting moments as well. Malcolm Farr, if you look at actually some of the difficult moments, though, throughout this week, I'm thinking Gladys Liu, the Liberal Party's candidate, for instance, in the seat of Chisholm, of course, Julia Banks becoming an independent, running in another seat of Flinders. That was one moment. We had the Peter Dutton issue where he said about his opponent that she was using her disability as an excuse not to move into the electorate. That was another moment. Even today, we've had this moment where Scott Morrison has raised and now tried to shut down this issue of nuclear power. On the Labor side, there have been some issues, you know, to be very balanced and fair, where we've seen Bill Shorten deal with these Israel comments of some candidates, and then, of course, Bill Shorten also with losing 24 hours of his campaign when he essentially forgot about his superannuation policy and then had to remember the next day. There's been these moments as well. How do you assess all those moments? Who's had more troubles on the campaign trail? Because they're very disruptive moments for campaigns, aren't they?
They are very disruptive because you assume that the party set out on a very professional and ordered and well-structured basis to run their campaigns. Therefore, any glitch, any stumble, any funny move or sad move is magnified, because we assume people are running their operations like a well-oiled machine. And when the gears start grating and when the cogs fall off, it's much more obvious than it might be during a normal political week. And I've got to say, I think the accumulation of stumbles and detaching cogs, I think the coalition seems to have had most of them this week. And it ranges from everything from the increased attention on absentee MP George Christensen up in Mackay, back down to what individual candidates are saying about LGBTI people, even if it was said in the past. Labor has had its problems, and I think you put it very well about Bill Shorten forgetting his own policy. But in terms of pratfalls and tripping over their own feet, I think the coalition has had a pretty nasty week.
Yeah, to be fair, Bill Shorten said that he thought he was being asked whether he had more policies to announce on superannuation changes.
Yeah, whether there'd be new policies, new taxes this campaign. But, you know, that's part of the problem. Labor is saying, well, you know, don't you remember? We laid out our policy last March. Now, I'm afraid voters don't snip out stories from the newspaper and put them on the fridge from last March so they can constantly refer to whatever Labor policy might be. You have to remind them, and I think the ARP at the moment is putting too much emphasis on things they said 12 months ago and thinking it'll still be in the minds of voters.
Amy Remakis, you've seen, of course, some of these campaign hiccups, am I going to call them that, moments that have just not gone according to plan. I'm sure head office sort of goes nuts, headquarters for both campaigns goes, no, and they try to manage these stories. How have you seen them? Do you think the coalition's had more of these than Labor as well?
I do, but I think that Scott Morrison has just been better at not talking about them because he just refers to everything as a bubble problem. That's a bubble question. I'm moving on from that. I addressed that yesterday, and he's kind of immovable from that line. So I think it's going to get a little bit harder because, as Malcolm and you both know, that these problems don't stop coming up because there's a lot of candidates out there and they've got a lot to say on a lot of issues, and this does come up over and over again, and eventually he's going to have to start answering questions about that, just like Labor does. But I kind of use my dad as a bit of a like a touchstone on this stuff because he's not aligned to any particular party. He's interested in politics, but not overly much. So I like to see what he gets from it. And the things that he's raised were the Peter Dutton disability comments and also George Christensen. And they've kind of been outer campaign moments, but that's what's resonated with him. And I think as the campaign rolls on, we're going to see more of that.
And of course, Craig Kelly did an interview as well, I understand, Malcolm Farr, which has really attracted a lot of your attention. Now, Craig Kelly, just to remind our viewers who are not necessarily, you know, experts in who Craig Kelly is, he's a Liberal MP, he's often appeared on Sky News, and he was really raising lots of issues when Malcolm Turnbull was the Prime Minister about the climate change policies and very much against the National Energy Guarantee. What's he done that has got your attention?
Well, you've got to remember, as Amy said, George Christensen has come to the fore during this campaign because of the roughly 300 days he spent overseas, mostly in the Philippines, between April 2014 and June last year. Michael McCormack, the Nationals leader, had to go to him last July and say, stay home. Anyway, it seems that this behaviour might be inexcusable unless you are the Liberal member for Hughes, Craig Kelly, who was on Sky and offered the excuse that, well, while George might have been overseas, we've all got our iPads, we've all got our iPhones, and we've all got our internet connections, essentially arguing that he might have been well in charge of the matters affecting the folk of Dawson and North Queensland while he was traipsing around Manila. This was a stunning and almost a plaudible attempt at an excuse. But it did, apart from the absurdity of it all anyway, it did raise in some people's minds a comparison between Mr. Kelly's excuse for Mr. Christensen and Peter Dutton's attacks on Ali France, the Labor candidate in his seat of Dixon. He said that she should be condemned for living about, you know, 5 kilometres outside the electorate of Dixon. And I haven't heard him yet condemn George Christensen for spending so much time about 5,000 kilometres away from his electorate of Dawson.
What an idea. Just take your iPad, go anywhere around the world and represent your electorate. An iPad away.
Why bother staying in Australia at all?
Well, you know, constituents can email you, I suppose. You're just not available physically to meet them. Maybe you can do some FaceTime. All right. Now, Amy, Let's talk about the big climate issue that's certainly been very much in the headlines today. The government talking about the hit to the economy of Labor's climate abatement policies. This is clearly one of their big areas of complaint and campaigning against Labor. But equally, the Greens have been saying in your website, in The Guardian, that they're not very much in favour of Labor's policies either. So Labor's copying it from the right and the left. How are they managing this issue? I mean, is this a problem for them?
I think it is a problem for them, but I think for the first time this week, we actually saw them come up with an answer for it, which is what is the cost of doing nothing? And that actually is a pretty huge cost because we have seen what has happened in this country over the last decade of not having a proper climate policy that we have kept to. It took them quite a long time to come up with this line, and they can't answer what the cost to the economy is going to be because a lot of their plans involve like talking to business, coming up with it when they are in government, because it's sort of a bit of a movable feast and it's not a lot of work that oppositions can necessarily do. So they do have some leeway there. They do need to come up with a better way of explaining, you know, how this cost is going to be disseminated across the economy and across the community. But actually turning it around and saying we are using the same modelling, we are using a lot of the government's policies that they told us, you know, were going to work. What is the cost of doing nothing? And as for the Greens, I mean, are we really going to go back to 2009? Are we going to do this again? Because we have seen what has happened. And I think we're going to see a bit of a backlash there too.
Malcolm Farr, does Labor need a better answer on the cost to the economy? And does the government have to also answer on their policies and the cost to the economy? I mean, you can't have it one way and not the other.
Well, I think Labor really is trying to push off a definitive response into the future. And Sammy said, saying, oh, we're going to consult people, hell, west and crooked. On the other side of things, I listened to Scott Morrison today explain government policy, which he did at length, and I'm none the wiser. I have no idea what he was talking about. Look, the competing principles are pretty basic. Labor says that business should choose the cheapest way to clean up its emissions, either by addressing them directly or by buying carbon credits. The government says that the taxpayer should fund any cleanup of business. And look, in very simplified terms, that's the difference. But there's a lot of detail involved in both plans, and either the respective sides haven't come up with that detail yet, or if they have attempted to, voters have been left baffled. And you cannot blame the voters. You have to blame the parties themselves.
What can we expect next week? Because, of course, we're going to see a sort of suspension of campaigning for the Easter period, particularly Good Friday, Easter Sunday. But Amy, are we going to see a real revving up of the campaigns next week? What do you anticipate?
I don't think we're actually going to see this campaign properly start until about April 29, which is when pre-poll opens. It's the first leaders debate. And then it's a clear run until May 18, because you've got another Anzac Day break in the middle of this as well. And I just think that both parties and campaigns are aware of the fact that people aren't really connected. So why would you waste your energy until you have to? So April 29 is when it's going to just go all guns blazing.
I love how specific you were. April 29. Put it in your diaries, people. Malcolm Farr, what do
on
you think?
On the calendar.
Malcolm Farr?
Look, I agree entirely. That is the date when people can apply for postals and personal early voting. And we had confirmed today that something like a third of the 16.5 million voters will be voting early in this election. That's the Australian Electoral Commission's anticipated figure. That means for the crucial last 2 weeks of the campaign, a third of the electorate won't be interested, won't be involved. They'll be off doing something else because they've already voted. They'll be beyond the reach of the parties. Now, this is such a contrived campaign with these holidays through it. It's going to be interesting to see who benefits most from this, the government or the coalition or Labor. Either way, I think we're going to see this get rather vigorous in the final week, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks or so. I think we're going to see the aggression factor turned up because really, there's there's nothing else to lose. They've got to do it in those final 2.5-3 weeks or it won't happen at all.
Just want to pick you up on this aggression element. And you did mention earlier something that I kind of noted. So I'm going back there before I let you go, Malcolm Farr, that Malcolm Turnbull didn't run such an aggressive campaign. We're seeing this different kind of campaigning from Scott Morrison. And there's no doubt about it. It's really obvious, but doesn't risk turning voters off as well if he goes too negative, too aggressive? Is it a risky strategy?
Well, he's been allowed to do it because Labor has yet to occupy the policy field in so many areas. But yeah, if anybody can overreach, it's Scott Morrison. Just got to remember the $185 million press conference he had on Christmas Island. If he can overreach, well, he might just do it. But look, I think the coalition learned from 2016 when Malcolm Turnbull was dead against negativity and Labor went full negative with the Mediscare. I think they've decided never again, and they're going to be, as I say, going steel cap boots and all this campaign. So put on your shin pads and your mouth guard because it's going to get rough.
I'm ready. I've got an old helmet. I'll find it. Thanks, guys, for coming on.
Pleasure, Patricia.
And that was The Guardian's Amy Romeikis and Malcolm Farr from news.com.au.